Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Stock Car Inferno by David L. Winter. What if everything you believed about stock car racing turned out to be a lie? Race car driver Emmeline Martin hides behind a bold, brassy public persona that delights fans and torments her male rivals. As she fights to complete a championship season, a bitter, aging icon aims to knock her off her pedestal. If he has his way, George Martin will knock her out of racing for good. During a grueling duel at Pocono Raceway, Emmeline bumps George's car, setting off an explosion that engulfs him in a fireball. Hunky Italian lawyer Antonio and his detective brother Rocco must get to the bottom of the explosion before Emmeline loses everything dear to her. Can he save her from the demons of her past that threaten to undo all of the success she's building? Meanwhile, bodies pile up as a killer desperately plots to keep Antonio from the truth. Stock Car Inferno will keep you on the edge of your seat as you race to its exciting climax.
Hi, and welcome to this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hemmerker, and I'm glad you joined me. Today I have with me David L. Winters. He is an award-winning author and speaker. His fiction includes Driver Confessional and Stock Car Inferno. So welcome to my show, David.
Sarah, thanks so much for having me.
So now you're both of these romantic suspense fiction books, they have to do with cars. So I have to ask, do you like cars? What kind of car do you drive? Is this some sort of, personal kind of interest?
Honestly, what I was trying to do was to create some fiction books that might be of interest, not just to women, because we know women read a whole lot of books, but also to some men as well. And so I thought of doing a series of my first three books that have something to do with a driver. And so the first one was about an Uber driver, and his name is Antonio Simonis, and he's Ubering part-time, but in law school at night. So when I came to the second book in the it's not really a series or each standalone books, but in the second book, then Antonio is now a lawyer. So he ends up practicing law through the second book. And so I like the driving idea. I enjoyed it a lot. And the third book, just to give you a little hint, is about a truck driver. So I'm getting farther and farther afield from Uber driving as I go.
Right. So I have to ask, what kind of car do you drive, since we're talking about cars?
Well, I don't have anything exciting to say there. I drive a Kia Soul, and I was a Chevy baby most of my life, and I usually have Chevys, but I sold my soul for this one because I really had to have a car that could haul books around in easily.
Right.
And this has a nice fourth back, and the books fit so neatly in boxes in the back. So.
It's funny what as we get a little older, how we go, oh, maybe not the muscle car. I need some transportation here. I need some hauling ability. I totally understand that. We actually have a Kia Sedona minivan, which we've had for years, and I love it. And we also just bought a Kia Optima hybrid, a used one for my husband, which has been great. So we're all about Kia. Not that this is a Kia commercial. Don't worry, readers. We're getting back to listeners. We're getting back to fiction. But Kia makes some good vehicles, we found. So what do you like about writing romantic suspense? I mean, as you said, a lot of the readers are women, a lot of the writers are women. But what is it that you found, maybe intriguing about this genre?
Well, to start with, I have always liked suspense. My babysitter, when I was probably 5 years old, started me out on Edgar Allan Poe.
All right. So that give you some nightmares, did she?
Well, it explains a lot about my personality and my battle with anxiety earlier in my life. But no, but I have always thought it was really a talent to be able to tell a story that keeps people not only engaged, but kind of eager to find out what's happening next. And when I came into my early 20s, I started reading Stephen King because that's what, guys read. And I absolutely love his ability to tell a story that kind of grabs you. And, his first book, The Stand, he goes from like, he goes from point of view to point of view from these different people that eventually can converge later on in the story. But I kept going like, why are you going over to him or to her? I want to go back to this other guy and see what he's doing. So, but it did really, really capture my attention. And so, I went through my regular career, and then when I retired, I was determined to start writing. And that was just a few years ago. And so, it really attracted me, the idea of writing stories that might grab people and keep them engaged.
So, what do you think has been most frustrating about writing in this genre?
Well, I think with anything, there's a learning curve, and you want to listen to the people who are best. And I've tried to, read some of the people that I respect. Danny Petrie, I like a lot, and the Christian romantic suspense, and others, and several others. And but I think a frustration of anything you're doing is to at first is you think you have a handle on what's going on, and then you get your edits back, and you're like, oh wow, I didn't think of that. And it's just frustration. I think we're all a little bit perfectionist, in our hearts. And so the fact that, we have to kind of go back to the drawing board. And, I was very lucky in both my first two books to get really quality editors and to help me, just be the best I could be at this point in my writing career.
And what I, there's some of the same frustration. It is a learning curve, I think. And there's many things that one has to learn. How do you find that? How do you research? Where do you go? I mean, were you a stock car driver, in a former life, or?
I was not. But interestingly, when I retired, I didn't want to just sit down and do nothing right at first because I thought that would be too big of a leap from, running around the Washington rat race, going crazy and working at government, and then all of a sudden doing nothing. So I Ubered for 5 months to get the stories for Driver Confessional. And that really helped me a lot because, I didn't even know what Uber was when my friend suggested I try it as like an interim thing as I retired. And then I thought, oh, that's going to make a great book, And then people get in your car and it's like half the people don't even notice you're there. And so they go on with their life having very personal conversations on the phone or arguing wildly with the person they're with or
Oh my
whatever.
goodness, yeah.
And then another group of people want to chat you up and find out all about you and tell you all about them. So just a great cross section of people. And that was the best possible research I could have done. Now, for stock car racing, I personally, did not obviously participate in stock car racing because I work for the government. But I have a nephew who is amazingly involved, and he was a gas man, or still a gas man, actually, for the NASCAR races. And so he was able to tweak my idea a little bit, and then also to read through and say like, "Oh, this is realistic. This couldn't happen. You called this that, not what you were calling it," and things like that. So he was very, very helpful. And you really need an expert if you're going to write something in a real specific area like that, because there's a lot of NASCAR fans that have already read the book and. They seem to be pretty pleased with with the story.
Right, because I mean, there's nothing worse, is there, than picking up a book and reading it and it going, Oh my goodness, that couldn't possibly happen because you have insider knowledge with that, or you know that. So it is, I think it is very important as writers for us to get the, to get it as right as possible. Now, I know that readers, and as a reader myself, I know that I'm willing, as long as they get most of it right, I'm happy to go along. I know they're going to change some things for their, for the story. I get that. But it's when those little things that, they misname something. I'm like, okay, now that's a mistake, and that wouldn't have been that hard to figure out. So it's, I mean, just it is challenging to make sure that, our books are accurate.
Yeah, one thing I learned was, if you're watching on television, they'll say, oh, and the caution flag has come out. But if it's the race official calling down to tell the flagman what to do, he just says, pull it out, like really fast, because, that means something terrible is going on the track, perhaps, and they need to get the caution, going as quickly as possible or put them under caution. So it was little things like that that, I just feel kind of proud that I knew someone that knew enough about it that could help me get it right.
Right, and it's just, and that kind of thing is what your readers are going to appreciate. I mean, I may read it and have no idea whether that was right or not, but it's going to have the authentic feel to it. So that's, I think that's important. So now, I mean, you're retired, so now do you write like you did your job, like 8 hours a day? I'm going to be very disappointed if you don't, because you have the time,
I
but.
don't. No, and I'll tell you, when I was working, I stopped 5 months before I retired for a sabbatical, and I took all these great notes to write a book about my sabbatical, and that was actually my first nonfiction book. And I found that I could not come home after 9.5 hours of work and have anything much left to give to writing. So when I retired, that gave me the freedom to, get up normally, have some breakfast, and then kind of go at it. I'm more productive in the morning. So a lot of times when I'm writing a book, I'll write for 3 or 4 hours in the morning, and then that's all I write during the day. Now, as you know from your experience as well, there's a lot more that you have to do. You're always marketing one of your books, but also there's editing, there's just promoting other people to help them get ahead in the Christian writing world. And then there's, attending events. So for me, about 3 or 4 hours is about how long I'm creative and good. And until I get edits back, I can edit 3 or 4 days in a row, and I'll go 10 or 12 hours, because then I'm kind of just so immersed in the story and trying to bring it to where I want it to be, and I appreciate the input. But normally 3 or 4 hours is all I write.
So, where's your favorite spot for reading or reflecting on your current work in progress? Where do you go to maybe do you have an office? Do you go to a coffee shop? Do you what's your favorite spot?
Well, I'd like to tell you that I take a pack mule up to a secluded mountain resort, I have all these beautiful Aztec blankets around me, and then I do it up there. But actually, I sit at the same desk in my home office and look at the computer, because I just love dual monitors. I love being able to check something, and whether it's a word usage or it's a fact or anything else on one screen, and then have the manuscript up on the other screen and be able to do it there. So, and also I'm a prisoner to things like Pro Writing Aid and, things like that. So I really enjoy, being able to use the latest software to kind of punch up my writing and go to the next level.
All right, great. We are almost out of time, David. Is there anything else about your writing that you want to share with our listeners before we close this podcast?
Well, I think the number one thing for all of us is, if you're going to write Christian fiction, it needs to come out being a Christian book. And we as you know too, that I was at a conference with you very, very recently, and Sarah Bowlby told us three things, you know, that make a book Christian. And hope is probably the most obtuse of those, but obviously very important. And I don't like to read a Christian fiction book and at the end think, wow, I don't feel a lot better than when I started. So I really aim to make people feel that they've been on a journey, but there is hope for the future at the end. And then I think pointing people to God, you know, that's another major thing about Christian books. And so I hope that that's what I'm doing with my books. With my nonfiction, I get into the teaching scripture and things like that. I don't throw a lot of scripture into my fiction, obviously, but so I think that's the main thing. And I'd really, anytime I can promote another author that's out there with the goal of creating a Christian book and getting it to people to read it, I want to really help do that.
All right. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And thanks for being on my show today.
Well, thanks for having me.
You've been listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense. I'm your host, Sarah Hammerker, and I'm glad you joined me today. I've been talking with David L. Winters. He's an award-winning author and speaker. His fiction includes Driver Confessional and Stock Car Inferno, and you can connect with David. His social media links and bio are with this podcast. So we'll see you next week. Thanks for joining me.
Now an excerpt from Stock Car Inferno by David L. Winter. A figure cloaked in shadows approached the exterior fence far from his intended target. He slid underneath through a hole he'd dug days earlier. Once inside the security perimeter, he carefully pulled the black satchel in behind him. Then he waited. 4 minutes evaporated in a heartbeat. The overcast skies, essential to his plan, obscured what could have been a three-quarter moon. Next came the signal he'd been awaiting. A single security guard, having walked the whole perimeter of the acres-long building, rounded the corner nearest him. Still at least 100 yards away, the streetlight installed next to the giant garage lit the guard up like a spotlight at the opera. No way the security man could see someone crouching in the shadows at this distance. Barely pausing, the guard traversed the side of the building, disappearing around the front. A creature of habit, the guard made only two rounds per night. The first patrol came at midnight, and this one at 3 a.m. Next, he returned to his guardhouse and would fall sound asleep in minutes, unaware of any danger. Once the guard had time to settle in, the figure dressed in black crept near the back fence and made his way halfway along the back of the building. Two windows down from the one where he painted a small X in black magic marker, the demolitions expert pried open an aging window. With care, he forced it, making little sound. Certainly nothing audible above the whir of the air conditioning unit in the guard shack. Climbing in through the window with the satchel proved difficult only because of the difference in grade from outside the building to the inside. The windowsill stood only 5 feet above grade outside. Inside, the drop from the window to the floor must be at least 8 feet. Once negotiated, the intruder looked around and identified his target. He took off his gloves and put them in the satchel next to the purpose of his visit. The car sat splendidly silhouetted by yellow light shining in from the front of the garage. A minute later, the man in black withdrew an oblong object from his bag. He held the device up to the bottom of the car. His small flashlight revealed a perfect fit, an exact color match. Months of careful planning and surreptitious reconnaissance paid off to perfection. An artist of sorts, he painted the underside near the right rear quarter panel with a superadhesive polymer. The motion trigger, which took months of development, must be handled with care. He armed the trigger and pressed the entire device firmly into the epoxy, affixing it to the bottom of the car. It formed a perfect bond and looked indistinguishable from the rest of the underbody. As he put the top back on the two-part epoxy, a light moved in front of the building. He lay still. The voices of two men indicated they walked with pace past the bay door.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.